chairman at Stony Brook of the Department of Biology. On September 6, 1987, at the home of Carl Hartzell in Oldfield.
Carl thought second sources or something. I might want to interrupt it from your time to time.
All right.
So should I just start talking?
Start talking with the question, but don't confine yourself to the question. In other words, I want to get some structure.
Well, I'm likely to ramble, and if we don't get done today, we might have to have another session.
Right.
Because there's some interesting little tangents along the way, which are not at all developed in these questions.
Right.
And probably which no one else would even comment on. That would be my guess. Okay. Are we starting?
Are we starting?
We're starting. All right. But my name is Frank C. Ehrk. I am presently a professor in the Department of Biochemistry, and I am one of the initial members of the faculty of this institution. The institution, which was given the somewhat unwieldy name of the State University College on Long Island, was officially opened in 1957, 30 years ago, and at that time I was 32 years of age. I had finished graduate school at Johns Hopkins, and I had always had as a goal obtaining a position teaching at a small liberal arts college. Consequently, I took a position at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, which is on the Eastern Shore and is the 10th oldest institution of higher learning in the country. It was founded in 1782. I went as a member of the biology department, in fact, head of the biology department, and taught most of the courses in biology.
Most of the courses in biology.
As well as being the director of the college choir. So I bring that point up because when I came to Oyster Bay, there was no person on the faculty who was interested in or qualified to direct the college choir. I volunteered to do this in addition to everything else we were doing the first year, and we organized the choir from the small student body that we had.
In other words, you came in 57?
I came in 57.
Right.
I was the first biologist to come to the institution and the second scientist. Dick Mould was here.
Dick Mould,
just before me.
I tried to get him at Bucknell.
Bucknell? Oh, you to come to Bucknell, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, yes, right. I see. Right. When I was in the middle of my service at Washington College, I got an opportunity to apply for a fellowship at the University of Chicago, and I wanted and became a Carnegie intern in general education at the University of Chicago. They had a program then which involved several universities across the country, and if I remember correctly, I think Francis Bonner was in the same program at Harvard at that time. At any rate, I had always been interested in the problems and challenges of general education, and going to the University of Chicago gave me an opportunity to see how general education was dealt with at one institution. trying to transmit some of my enthusiasm and some of my ideas to the faculty of Washington College, because I felt that a small college was the ideal way to try to get some of these ideas implemented. Washington at that time had a, I guess one would say, a rather traditional organization for its academic program. Well, it was also a very traditional faculty in a way, and they did not move easily or quickly to new ideas. However, I did get started a committee and some proposals, which led to a great simplification of the curriculum and a concentration upon fewer courses, and we instituted what was then called the four-course plan, which insisted that students take their courses in larger units, and take it in larger units and not have so many different kinds of food on the plate at the same time, so that they could concentrate more on fewer courses. And that's a plan which has survived the test of time and is still in use. I had been at the college for 5 years when I got a letter from a friend of mine whom I had met at the University of Chicago 3 years before. He was in charge of the physical sciences there in the college, natural sciences 1 and 3. And he said, I had been in touch with him over the years, and he said, I don't know if you're interested or not, but there's a brand new college that's going to open as part of the state university system of New York. And I was going as head of science and mathematics, but I decided at the last minute that I can't do it, and I suggested your name for this position. Well, I had no inclination of any kind to change my employment at that time. I was tenured, I had a very successful choral group. Even though still young, I had attained a kind of position of leadership in the faculty. I had just obtained one of the first National Science Foundation grants, and to be given to someone who's in a very small college especially. And I was not interested in any move. However, in order to be courteous and to respond to what I figured was a kind recommendation, I did write to Leonard Olson, who was the dean of this new college, and said that I had a letter from Aaron Sabet. Although I wasn't interested in moving this year, I would like to learn more about the college, because Aaron had told me some things that intrigued me very much, and I thought it's certainly something that I should learn more about. And so I don't know exactly when it was, but perhaps late July or early August, I drove up to Long Island, to Oyster Bay, and brought along Ruth, my wife, and my daughter of less than 1 year, and we drove onto the estate outside of Oyster Bay called Planting Fields. And this was the former estate of William R. Coe, and I must say that when I drove onto that estate, I thought it was just one of the most striking and beautiful locations I'd ever seen in my life. Absolutely stunning. think my appointment was at 1:30 in the afternoon or something like that. And so I went up to the Mansion House and I found Leonard's office and we left and walked out onto the grounds to chat. To chat, I thought. And we talked without stopping for 6 hours.
My goodness.
Without even a drink of water during that period of time. We never stopped talking for 6 hours. And I had completely forgotten that,
that you had
I had a wife and a little girl somewhere out there in the woods. And because I was absolutely fascinated by Olson about what he had to say about the new college, what his goals were, what his positions were on matters of education. I think it would be fair to say that I had never been so influenced so deeply by one person before as I was upon that encounter. So by the end of the time, he had offered me a position, essentially, and he grilled me very severely during that time, of course, about where I was coming from. And I had a very difficult decision to make, to leave an academic position of trust in the middle of the summer with heavy responsibilities the following fall, leading administration that I admired, was in itself almost enough to reject the offer out of hand.
Right.
But as we talked about it, and as the potential of this new position became clearer, we both decided that we should do it. Well, I won't go through all of the turmoil that went on during the next few weeks, but I had to resign, I had to arrange for moving all of our possessions, I had to obtain rental housing in the area, which turned out to be Bayville that first year, and I had to make at least one and perhaps two trips up to Oyster Bay to hold preliminary meetings with the science faculty. So that was indeed a very intense time for us. But we did find a house in Bayville. We had to move not only the usual furniture, but we had a grand piano, and we had to find room for that in a rental house which was fully furnished on the sound. And by the time August came to an end and September began, we had moved to Oyster Bay. I even had to find a replacement for myself at Wharton College, which was not easy. We turned out not to be very good presume the Board of Trustees,
Central Office,
Central Office, was definitely to create an institution of high quality under public offices that would fill a very desperate need for education in the sciences and mathematics. There was an agonizing reappraisal going on nationwide at that time about the quality of our teaching in the sciences and, in fact, the quality of our research in the sciences. And it was perhaps symbolic that two or three weeks after classes began, that Sputnik was launched by the Soviet Union. Also, 2 days after classes began, the first underground nuclear test was done at Los Alamos. So we were at a time in history when our ability, and speaking of our ability, the ability of the world to control the proliferation of nuclear weapons was severely in doubt. So on the one hand, we had to improve our technical expertise. On the other hand, we had to somehow impose a kind of sensitivity and humanity upon people so that they understood what the crisis was that the entire world was facing up to. I was in looking through my papers, I came upon the notes that I made almost exactly 30 years ago today. These are dated 4th of September, 1957. And this was the faculty meeting that was held prior to the, one of the faculty meetings held prior to the opening of classes. And I have, it just happened to have in this meeting, all of the dates of that first month. We met on Tuesday the 10th of September, 9:30 in the morning. We scheduled a faculty meeting for the 13th of September, also at 9:30, and I have the minutes of most of these meetings. We had registration of students on the 17th of September, and classes began on the Wednesday the 18th of September. Classes began at 8:30 in the morning, and I taught the very first class to be taught at this institution. It was a natural sciences one class, and no other classes met until 9 o'clock. So, by a hair, I taught the very first class. Now, the program that we had worked out did not include any biology in the first year. So even though I served as head of the Division of Science and Mathematics, there was no biology to teach the first year. So I taught Natural Sciences 1, which is physical science, and I taught Mathematics 1, and also served as course chairman for those two courses, convened the meetings, worked out the syllabus, and so on. We had, first year we had a biologist, a chemist, who was Barry Gordon, a physicist. He was, Chris Swartz was only, was part-time, because he was part-time at Brookhaven.
Right.
And Bob Kalachowski, who was a mathematician. So we were all doing somewhat double duty that first year of teaching these courses. It was extremely difficult to recruit people in the sciences at that time. There just weren't enough to go around. Every university and every college was expanding, still having a very large veterans load after the Second World War, and
You recruited outside of biology, then?
I recruited in the whole area of science and mathematics. So in that way, we recruited Francis Bonner, who came the second year, and William Lister, who came the second year. And I'll tell you a little story about how William Lister happened to come, okay, to Stony Brook. I had looked everywhere for mathematicians, and I could not find any. Now, in those days, faculty members in mathematics were so scarce that at Washington College, we had taken on a retired mathematician from Brown University by the name of Ray Gilman. A wonderful man, and I came to know him quite well. He was he was a stamp collector. He had a daughter-in-law who was an Urquin before she was married, and we had interesting little links together. Wonderful man. Had a very heart condition, and had hesitated very much before entering the retired professor's registry, which was a big thing then, because colleges all over the country were using retired faculty to staff their courses.
I remember.
And he worked very hard, I'm afraid, but he took it in good grade. So when I came to Oyster Bay and had the job of finding mathematicians, I remembered Dr. Gilman, who was still back at Washington. And I wrote to him, I said, do you know of any mathematicians that we might be able to recruit for this new college? That's a little bit about it, what our goals were, and so on. And
he gave me two names at Brown University. I actually came across that little slip that I had written in 1957. I don't know if I have it here just now. But one of the names was Bill Lister, assistant dean. So I have all the notes that I made in trying to, I talked with him by telephone in the end when he called. At any rate, another mathematician was older than Bill, who was at Brown, and I could come up with his name, but it's not really important at the moment. So Len Olson and I decided to go to Brown to talk with these two people. We called up, we made appointments, and Bill was then assistant dean of the college at Brown. And Laura Krukat and so on. And when I liked both of these men, actually, but when I saw Bill, I liked him immediately. He would have a very outgoing and forthright way of speaking. And so we talked with him for a long time, and finally Len offered him a position in mathematics. Now, Bill had been an assistant professor of mathematics at Brown, and I'm trying to remember some of the details here, but my one day Len called me at the office and he says, we've lost Lister. And I said, why? I thought he was ready to come. And well, he said, Lister wants a professorship here. And we've only offered him an associate professorship. So we had a crisis meeting of everyone at the time, and I took the position. I said, first of all, he's a very good man. Secondly, we need mathematicians desperately, and therefore I recommend that we offer him a professorship in mathematics. I want to check the second catalog just to make sure I was right in that recollection. So that implied a little bit more money, Thatcher to develop the mathematics program. So Bill Lister took charge of that.
This hole is the first.
Okay, coming through all right?
Yeah.
Do you transcribe these after they...
I'll copy first.
Yes.
Right. They copy.
In fact, I'd like to have a copy to the case. I give you some errors in the fact that I can know what I said. I should say just a word about the first year of the college. The total faculty that first year consists of 14 members, plus Don Cook as full-time librarian. The two most important administrative people were Len Olson, who was dean, and Alan Austell, who was dean of students. That title for Austell only reflects faintly all of the responsibilities that he had and all of the activities that he participated in. He was very intellectual. He wanted to participate in as many of the academic activities as he could. He felt that he could best serve as the contact with the students if he knew what they were doing in class, and he took his responsibilities extremely seriously. He also had come from St. John's College that had a strong tradition in the great books and liberal education, and brought many of the insights that he had gained there to the initiation of similar activities at Oyster Bay. So he was an extremely important person. The college really, really moved about those two very strong people, Leonard Olson and Alan Austell. They were the formative persons in the administration at that time. We eventually recruited from Hofstra, I think it was, during that first